What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, their parents, teachers, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Autism spectrum disorders are complex with a range of conditions. They can have a very different feature and symptom, and it's very difficult to understand for families and professionals. They are the fastest growing developmental disability in the United States, with an increase in diagnoses from 1 in 150 in 2000 to 1 in 68 in 2016 and 1 in 42 for boys. This hour, Marguerite Elisoffen and her daughter, Samantha, join 411 Teen. Marguerite is the author of My Picture Perfect Family, What Happens When One Twin Has Autism. Marguerite and Samantha, welcome to 411 Teen.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Yes, I look forward to talking with you. Marguerite, will you share the impetus for you writing this book?
Well, first of all, I was extremely proud of my daughter for all the progress that she made, so that was inspiring to me. But I also remembered how hard it was for so many years, especially, I would say, actually, up until age 12 or 13, how many difficulties we had and how many people were negative. And I wanted to reassure other families out there that are beginning the journey of raising their child not to become discouraged or defeated, or to allow experts to necessarily limit the horizons of their child. I mean, each kid is different and each expert is different, but it's my view anyway that parents know their kids better than anyone and right. can have a sense of what's possible if they don't allow themselves to become too discouraged.
Would you and your daughter share just what autism spectrum disorder is? I know it's characterized by a number of behaviors, social deficits, communication, you know, repetitive behaviors. But would you share from your experience?
Well, from my experience, again, each child is mm-hmm. different. And some children have, you know, the different levels of severity. But if I were to describe my own daughter, when she was little, she melted down very, very easily. She was difficult to console. She didn't make eye contact. Her language development lagged very far behind her brothers and other, you know, neurotypical kids her age. Unlike some other kids on the spectrum, she was extremely warmly related, very affectionate. She was not averse to touching or hugging, mm-hmm. although she didn't like hand-holding particularly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she was rigid, and she liked her routines, and she liked things the way she liked them. And if I'm sure this will sound familiar to any parent listening who has a child on the spectrum. And Samantha would describe herself, her favorite word is that you were a bummer, right?
Yes, a bummer.
And just what does that mean, Samantha?
A bummer, really hard to control, really hard to tolerate, and it was really not fun to take me places. Like for example, when I was getting, you know, dumped a lot, you know, with the babysitter, it was like mm-hmm. no fun. It was really unpleasant to take me, for example, on vacations and things like that. And my mom had to like put up with all that. Yeah.
And what happened when we would order soda for you?
When I was with my mom and the whole family, when I had to order soda, when I used to make a whole big, great big mountain out of a molehill, when the waiter or waitress would have to give me soda with ice, and I had a whole meltdown when they gave me ICE when I was a very difficult cutie patootie. That's the definition of the word bummer.
Mm-hmm.
And at least I wasn't polite about it when I was a bummer. I said I was complaining, but no ICE. I'm like complaining about like the ice cream. I would scream till the cows came home, like there was no tomorrow. I would cry and I'd complain.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example.
Yes.
Marguerite, at what point did you suspect that something was going awry with your daughter?
Very, very early, because, you see, I had her twin brother as a basis
mm-hmm.
of comparison. They were both preemie babies and both needed some time to catch up. They were born at 33 weeks, but, you know, when you're watching the development of two babies born at the same time from the same womb, and you notice that one is making, you know, tremendous
mm-hmm.
progress and the other isn't, that's a cause of alarm. I guess you could say 8-9 months we were starting to worry, but we had my brother-in-law is a pediatrician and his wife is a psychologist, so we did have that advantage.
Okay.
And it was through our questioning them that they told us to get her evaluated way, way earlier than most parents do back, especially in 1991.
And I'm sure that was to your advantage, because the earlier identified, the more advantageous the interventions may be.
That's true. We saw Dr. Stanley Greenspan when my daughter was a year old, or 14 months old.
Okay.
And we continued to see him up until basically she went to college, and then he died shortly thereafter. But yeah, and he was the one who, you know, gave us hope, one of the people who gave us hope.
Well, you make it sound like you didn't receive a lot of hope. Would you share your experience that you had as far as identifying exactly what the issues
were? What I mean
were?
By no hope?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. My daughter went to a school where the head of the school told us academics were not important for her when she was about, 12. Well, no, maybe 10 or 11. Yeah, the academics weren't important for her. The assumption was that she couldn't learn them, and even if she did, it wouldn't make any difference. I had people tell me that she'd never get married, that she'd never go to college.
Now, were these professional people telling you this?
Well, some of them were, and some of them were, you know.
Well, you say in the school.
There were a number of people. To be fair, there were people who said they didn't know.
Okay.
They just didn't know. And that I respected and that I was okay with, because how can you know where someone's going to be in another 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyone.
Would you share with us just what the evaluation and diagnosis was composed of? You know, did it rely on core behaviors? I mean, just what did the diagnosis involve?
Well, when she was very little, mm-hmm. when she was a baby, it was, you know, observational. As she got older, you know, there were IQ tests, there were questions, there were things for me to fill out. But there were a lot of observations also. And, you know, some of it's kind of obvious if you're looking for, you know, certain kinds of things. You do notice what a child is and isn't able to do. If you question that child and they have, you know, they aren't making eye contact, or they're not answering you, or they can't stay on topic, or they can't answer a why question.
Mm-hmm. What was her interaction like with her brother at this time, her twin brother?
Her interaction with her twin brother when they were little, very little, he tried very hard to engage her, and pretty much she had a very difficult time with it. You know, if he splashed her in the bathtub when they were infants, she didn't splash him back. She just started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, now and then he could engage her in physical things, you know, playfully. They could tickle each other, or they could, you know, but it was very difficult. And then as they got older, he would be embarrassed by her meltdowns and her demands and the way she behaved in general, and want to, like, run away from her.
and also resented all the attention that she got from mainly from me and also from her dad.
Mm-hmm.
He was jealous of the attention she got, and she was jealous of the fact that he could do everything more easily than she could, and that he had lots of friends and she didn't have any. So you might say it was a little bit challenging.
Well, and my next question to you is, how did you do it? I mean, where did your support come from?
Where did my support come from? Well, I had a very supportive, sweet husband who was behind me every step of the way. Even if he couldn't always handle our daughter, he would pick up the slack with our son. That was part of it. I had some good friends. For a while I was in therapy. I'm all for doing whatever you can
right.
to take care of yourself in order to take care of your family.
Indeed.
I exercised. When Prozac came out, I went down that road. So I did what I could.
I asked that because parents may be listening, and I know that it is a very difficult time for parents. You know, here you have this new bundle of joy that you're looking forward to, and as they grow and mature, it seems like there's one issue after another. So I asked you in hopes that you can offer some solace to those parents who may be...
I will offer some solace. I think having a sense of humor can help.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I mean, we were fortunate in the fact that her twin brother was very funny, and he used to make us laugh. And my husband has having a sense of humor can help weather a lot of storms, including the autism meltdown storms. I mean, I'm not saying it eradicates them, but it does provide some balance. And if you can find shared activities that everybody can enjoy together, whatever those might be at different ages and stages, that helps a lot. I mean, you know, if you have a kid who loves to swim, like my daughter, you go on vacation at places where they can swim. And if you want to, and you look for the strengths. You look for the strengths in your child. My daughter had perfect, we discovered from a music teacher, she had perfect pitch at age 7. So when she calmed down enough and became behaviorally appropriate enough, we were able to take her for voice lessons at age 10, and then she started to perform. So there's all kinds of different ways weather the storms and find the sunshine.
Mm-hmm. And what I hear you saying is that you emphasize those positives, those things that she enjoyed. Hold your thoughts for just a second. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and we are talking about autism spectrum disorders. Did you know that 1 in 68 children are diagnosed with autism, yet they receive only 5% of research funding? Marguerite, what was your experience like dealing with the schools? What type of supportive services did they offer you and Samantha?
Well, we were fortunate when she went to a mainstream nursery school with her twin brother.
Okay.
And they were, when we saw that wasn't working out so well, they allowed me to bring in a shadow teacher to sort of help her get through her day. And then I applied to special ed schools, the first of which provided, you know, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and all kinds of hands-on learning, which was really very, very helpful to her and to me. And but then there were other schools, you know, every school every year is only as good as the teacher that you get.
Right.
And,
indeed.
You know, so in terms of getting to the right schools, no one supported me. We just plowed on. You know, you have to apply to the Board of Education depends on where you live, of course, what kinds of schools are available and whether they have, you know, good public schools with support, or not. At the time that we were raising our daughter, we felt the best option for our daughter was a small 8-to-1 ratio in a special ed school where she could get intensive help all day long, as opposed mm-hmm. to going to a mainstream school, which is what she did when she was for the first 2 years, and going for a million hours of therapy as a little kid, and then they have no spare time. They don't get to come home and just relax or right. go on the swings.
Samantha, did you ever feel disconnected, like you did not fit with the other children?
Yes.
What were the conditions? How did you identify this? How did you know that maybe you were a little different? How did you feel about this?
How did you feel in comparison to your brother? Did you look at your brother?
Well, for example, my brother, I was really hopelessly jealous at the time. Like, for example, he had so many friends, and I had barely any. I had less. And I was like, I was really struggling socially to connect with my other peers, and it was so hopeless for me. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know what else to do because I didn't know what else to, and then I was like, it was all, I had so much competition over my twin brother, and it was like a battle. It was like a tooth, so I was really struggling tooth and nail to make friends. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew a lot of things where I knew less. I mean, that wasn't going to help me anyway. I was, like, so mindfully unaware that that wasn't going to help me at the end of the day. And I wasn't really aware that the reasons behind that, being jealous of him and having all that competition, wasn't going to help me because it was a waste of emotions. And I wasn't aware of it back then, that it wasn't fair, that I was having that competition, and that part I was aware of it, and I was, mm-hmm. and then I had this disconnect. It was really hard to connect because.
So you
because
wanted
I had
to
this
connect.
Power struggle. The fact that I always said, for example, why does he always have to have all these friends? Why does he have to do all these things so well, and I can't, Mom? Like, this is not fair and square. Like, but, and I was trying to learn from my mom that everybody has their own different sets of individual strengths and weaknesses. I was getting all the undivided attention and time and attention I need, and it was really hard for me to not always demand it. It was very hard. I always usually had the time and attention from my mom and my dad, and mm-hmm. and when I was really a bummer, as I say, my brother needed it. Sometimes it's not always fair and balanced.
When
I don't think self-awareness came about
okay.
Until sort of the teenage years, real self-awareness of understanding. I think she understood that she wasn't being treated, or the world wasn't responding to her the way it was responding to her brother. I think that's the way that she perceived it until she got a bit older.
So from what I hear is she wanted to connect. She wanted to have friends. She wanted
Very
to
badly.
Interact.
And I wanted to connect really badly, and I wanted to progress. I wanted to succeed really badly. I wanted to learn. I wanted the world to give me a good reputation, give me a good impression, and I wanted it to be even, Stephen, like things to level out and be more fair and balanced. And I wanted to move forward and strive better and go travel next tomorrow. I didn't want to be stuck in one place.
Okay, so you were dissatisfied. You were not happy with where you were at.
No, I was not a happy camper.
Okay, all right. And so what did you do? How did you handle your dissatisfaction?
Well, in the early years, I would say she had meltdowns.
Mm-hmm.
But as she got... When she hit about 12 or 13, puberty, which turns many young girls into, you know, hellions for their moms and dads, it seemed to have the opposite effect on her. We also had started on another medication, and we got her to a better school. So I think she learned better ways for advocating for herself and for being able to be more self-aware and have and exert better control. I mean, from a very, very early age, and I think this is really important for parents, all parents, but especially parents of, I think, kids with autism, is mm-hmm. if it's possible to teach, you know, manners, even if it takes a very long time, it's kind of your ticket into the better school in the neurotypical world. If you can, you know, in other words, if you could teach your kid to hold it together, you can give them different options. I mean, if you could teach flexibility over time,
mm-hmm.
It really helps everyone.
Well, so often parents talk about how difficult it is for them. Were you involved in any groups, or what did you find that was so very helpful and encouraging for you, Marguerite? Because I know there's so many. We have an autism group here in Tallahassee, and the parents just seem to be devastated.
Well, it was way worse. And I know this won't be, it's not any consolation to mm-hmm. know that in 1990 there was no autism support group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if your kid had a meltdown, they didn't suspect that maybe your kid had autism. They thought you had a spoiled brat or you were a terrible parent,
mm-hmm.
which was very isolating, very embarrassing, and very frustrating. However, to answer the question of how I coped, I love to dance. So I the endorphins from exercise helped. Like I said, antidepressants helped. I was in therapy for a long time, and then one fine day I realized that I had to stop mourning for the child that I didn't have,
mm-hmm.
and do the best I could with the two children I did have, make the most of their strengths, and help support them through their weaknesses, and love them for who they were, and that, you know, you can only talk about something so much, and then you realize, you know, I knew that I didn't need therapy anymore because mm-hmm. I knew that my reactions, my emotions, my anger, my sadness, my disappointment, my whatever it was at the time, was perfectly normal. I wasn't repeating some unhealthy pattern that any normal person who was confronted with the set of circumstances that we had would feel sad, disappointed, angry, whatever,
exactly.
all that gamut of emotions that I'm sure many parents of children with autism feel. And I would think that having a support group is helpful. Also, if you have parents who have walked in your shoes and whose children are a little bit older, I think that was, I really missed having that. I was always the parent with the kid helping the next one who was mm-hmm. younger. And I would have loved to have had someone, I hate to say it, but someone like me who could say, okay, well, what happened in this situation when mm-hmm. your kid was this age? Not each kid is different, so what worked for me might not work for someone else.
Right.
But I think it would have been nice to hear from someone else, oh, we handled that, or this is what we did, and this worked and this didn't work.
What about the reaction of your extended family? Were they involved at all?
Well, I have, my family is very small. My mom, Samantha's grandma, was very involved, especially when she was at her most difficult. She was sort of, as she likes to call herself, a cockeyed optimist, and she would go with me. We used to see a specialist in Washington, and she would go on the trip with me because I just couldn't handle it, you know, 24 hours in the beginning. But as for other, I don't have brothers or sisters,
okay.
And I would have to say that I don't think that my extended family was super supportive or helpful, but I don't think that they totally understood what it was that I was dealing with. I think that if they had, they may have responded a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really important, if I were raising a child today and with all the greater awareness and education, I would like to think that relatives who understand the situation and understand even how to handle a child like this would pitch in and be empathetic.
Okay. There are numerous theories that exist about the cause of autism, from genetic to environmental exposures to vaccinations. Where do you sit on this?
Well, I don't personally want to, I'm not an expert or a person who's scientific, but I think that the fact that I had my children, I had twins, that they were born prematurely, did not help things. More children are born with disabilities that are multiple and that are premature. So I think that might have been a contributing factor. I will never know. I don't know whether if my kids had been born at term, whether my daughter would have been okay or not. I don't believe vaccinations played a role with my children because both of my children received the same sets of vaccinations at the same time. They both had similar genetic makeup. So like I said, I don't think it was a trigger for my daughter, which is not to say that other families whose children regress after are developing perfectly and then regress after vaccination, that those people might not be right in thinking that the vaccination contributed to their situation. I think each person's at this point in time, with research being where it is, even my daughter's 25, and I don't really feel like they understand it that much better.
Okay.
Than they did when my child, when Samantha was little.
What types of educational provisions have been utilized? I'm talking about now in maybe middle school and high school. Those times are very, very difficult for young folks, whether they have autism or not. So how was that? How were you accommodated in the educational setting?
Well, my daughter changed schools a couple of times. So at the beginning, I should say when she was 12 or 13 and she went to a school in New York called Winston Prep, they pride themselves on educating the individual and on the individual differences. And each kid had a focus teacher where, you know, so that met with them once a day to go over whatever was going well or poorly in that child's life. And there was communication between the various teachers. And there was constant, sharing and feedback and brainstorming. And I think that was very helpful for my daughter. In terms of accommodations, as time went on, they give extra time. If you seek the accommodations for extra time or a quiet room, those are things that should be given. Those kinds of things.
Samantha.
If you need tutoring or extra help, you should seek it out.
Samantha, did you enjoy school?
I loved school, yes.
What was it about it that you found so interesting and appealing?
That I was able to really learn academically and socially and connect and slowly but not overnight and really meet lots of new people and make new friends slowly but surely.
Did you?
It really helped me. It was a wonderful experience.
You felt accepted?
I definitely felt accepted, I felt so honored and grateful for my acceptance. Especially when I got accepted to Winton, it was a wonderful school, and it was one of the greatest schools I ever went to, and I just loved everyone there so much, and especially of how well they helped me. Academically and socially, being able to help me think outside the box, make new friends, and do things, and they helped me so much. I mean, I just love that. That's one of my favorite schools ever, especially high school. Everybody I was really close to. They were really close to my heart and my souls and spirits, and being able to, and especially. especially being able to perform now, do all those Winston plays. And I really believed in them, just like they believed in me, especially how much they helped me after all those 5 years at Winston Prep, being able to take what I know and apply what I know. After thinking outside of applying it in life, they were so helpful, really such wonderful gifted teachers.
Mm.
And I just love them to this day. And I just could not have done it without them sitting here today.
That's great.
Anyway, the thing is, if you go to a school where the teachers believe you can do something, as opposed to the fact, instead of telling you that they can't do it or feeling sorry for your child that it's difficult and then giving up, if the teacher or school takes the position of, okay, they're not learning it this way, why don't we try that way? Or this worked in this situation, so let's try it over here. Or, you know, I got another kid in another class, Sally, in the other class, this worked for this child, maybe it worked for Samantha. So there was that kind of thinking going on, and there was tremendous respect for the child and the parents at the school that Samantha's discussing. It was a feeling that we were all on the same team together, and there was real respect, which I didn't feel, I have to say, at every school that I was at. And I think that parents should seek, if possible, if there is a school like that in their area where there's either compassion and understanding and a belief, a positive view. Not like, oh, these kids are limited, they can't do it, or poor Sally, it's hard for her, she can't read, let's not worry about it too much.
Hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a break. Children with autism spectrum disorder exhibit problems in communication, social interactions, and repetitive behavior. They may flap their arms to say they're happy or hurt themselves when upset. Sometimes they say the same sentence over and over to calm themselves down. There's no cure. Autism lasts throughout lifetime. Treatment can be biomedical, educational, therapeutic, or dietary. Marguerite, did you pursue any of these treatments in addition to what we've been talking about for your daughter? I mean, so often you hear a lot about this dietary constraints.
Some of these kids on the spectrum have digestive issues, and I think for them, probably the gluten-free diet and so forth, restrictive diets have helped some of them. But then there are other kids for whom restrictive diets don't work. I didn't even dare to try a restrictive diet at all until high school. If I took soda away from my daughter, we would have had to have all moved out of the house. I did try a variety of different approaches. I mean, I did ABA when she was seven. Mm-hmm. I did the floor time approach with Greenspan. I did, when she was very little, we we brushed her skin with a corn brush. She jumped on a trampoline. The swings were supposed to be good for her, so I, pushed her on the swings until I was ready. My arms were ready to fall off. We went to Washington, D.C. There was a program called the Vision and Conceptual Development Center because one of the reasons she didn't make eye contact was that her two eyes wouldn't converge on an object.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked on strengthening her eyes.
So we did a variety of approaches, and you have to, and each parent has to, I mean, there's, basically you have these labels and you have symptoms.
Exactly.
Your child may have some or all of them, and then you just have to address each one, irrespective of the label.
Are there any particular resources that you may recommend to the listening audience, for the parents who may be experiencing this? Are teachers or those who are involved at any level? Is there anything that you would recommend?
I actually recommend highly this Vision and Conceptual Development Center. It's now in Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Okay.
It was based on Piaget's theory of child development, and it takes your child at whatever age you explore it, but and looks at the child from not only the point of view of the eyes, but cognitive development, reasoning and logic and all the other things. And they start, the problem with many schools, in fact all schools, is that, you know, they're, your child may be at one level in one area and way behind in another area. But they're teaching to the average. If you want to help a particular child, or if teachers want to understand better how to address the needs of kids like Samantha, they need to understand where the child is starting from in different areas. And, I mean, I think reading Greenspan, reading Thinking Goes to School by Harry Wax, these are books that I think could be enormously helpful to teachers.
Samantha?
Yeah?
Now, you have graduated from college, correct?
Right.
Yeah. What did you major in?
Liberal arts.
Okay. And what are you doing now?
I'm out of college. I'm performing. I'm pursuing my dreams. I'm working with little cutie patooties. I'm in a place called TLB Musical with 4 months to 5-year-olds. It's called TLB Music School.
Well, I applaud you. That is.
And I perform at Dream Street. It's a nonprofit organization. It's a very professional and talented nonprofit organization. So it's really not just pursuing my dreams, but really making my dreams happen.
Well, that is fantastic.
Really, I'm just really at all. And by the way, seeing you performing, I also just finished a full length feature. Play with the movie of Keep the Change that just won Best Picture, Best Movie. I can't believe it. I'm becoming all over the screen.
That's great.
I'm really able. I'm being hit all these wonderful performance opportunities to show the world what I'm perfectly capable of doing and becoming my mom's ambassador, not just of her book, but a liaison of Dream Street, and be able to be an ambassador and show the world my musical theater passions with the outside world, not just neurotypical, the world, period, and that I could be an ambassador, and I can really work with cutie patooties, just in general, period, but the age range of 4 months to 5-year-olds, and what I really could do is, and I'm just performing, I had a rap party for the full-length sequel of Keep the Change that's going to be released in a year from now.
That's great. Marguerite, how did you get her to the point? All right, she got herself to the point of being able to go to college. And by that, I mean, you know exactly where I'm coming from. High school students with ASD, you know, they have the ability to go to college, but very, very few of them get there.
Well, first of all, she really wanted to. So you've got to have a kid who wants to do it. And is willing to do all the extra work and all the remedial work and put in, you know, write the paper 3 times and,
right,
you know, put in many more hours and work extraordinarily hard and sometimes not get it and occasionally fail a test completely even if you've studied for hours.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that kind of motivation. My daughter is extraordinarily motivated and determined, and I think you can tell by the way that she speaks.
Yes.
She has enormous energy.
Right.
Was
the college ready for her?
Well, she started at a college which is completely devoted to people with disabilities, not necessarily autism. It's Landmark College. And she was there for 2.5 years because we didn't know if she could do college. We just thought she should try it. We wanted her to be able to try it and have the opportunity. And then when she succeeded with that, we were fortunate enough that Pace University here had started a support program for kids with autism called OASIS. And they basically helped her with every aspect of college life, from the academics to the residential.
Can you give us an example of the type of accommodations that they made at Pace?
Well, she was in a regular, to her credit, she had to do projects with neurotypical students. She had to pass the same exams as everybody else. She had to write the same papers as everybody else. But she got like 5 hours of tutoring a week from the OASIS program. She was allowed to take the exam in another room if she wanted, in a quiet space with just her and maybe one or two other people from her who were also in the program. She got a note taker because her script, the way she writes, is sort of very loopy and hard to read, and also because many students like this, when they take notes, they just scribble down everything the teacher says as fast as possible. They're not processing the language and taking out what's enormous. So they're missing things that are important, and they're writing down the details. So I had a note taker. She did get a note taker.
In your opinion, what can be done to make it possible for ASD young adults to reach their fullest potential and become independent adults? Because that
well,
seems...
I think they have to have parents and educators that believe in them so that they learn to believe in themselves. I think they do need to acknowledge that they have a disability and that they need help with it, which is sometimes difficult. My daughter was always extraordinarily independent and wanted to be, which, again, that may vary. Maybe some young people are not as desirous of being independent, although most are. But if you're functioning at a level where you have a shot at being independent, then I think the community, parents, educators, and government entities should do everything in their power to enable these young people and young adults to live as independently as they can and to find their place in the world and, you know, not be a drain.
As far as the parenting, what was the most challenging of the parenting at this point that you could share with parents, Marguerite?
Right now or while she was in college?
While she was in college and where she is now.
What was most challenging was realizing that a lot of the things that I thought she could do or was doing at home were not transferring to school, like hygiene and laundry and grooming and all of that. That was a rude awakening that she needed a lot of help with that, and that wasn't going to sustain itself without some effort. And so that was one thing. The other thing is that very little preparation. I advise parents, especially of teenagers, to make sure their kids learn about the birds and the bees and understand, you know, how to keep themselves safe. It's hard enough for neurotypical students to stay safe in college and understand, you know, sexual encounters and how to handle those. I really wish I had started sooner with that. And having said that, I will just say that I went to an autism conference where every single woman, and these were Asperger women, were extraordinarily high-functioning, and every one of them had been assaulted.
I want to talk about bullying. You hear so much about bullying, and you're talking about these young women being assaulted. And I think the statistics say that around 63% of ASD have been bullied. They've been victims of bullying behavior. Can you share that? Did she experience that, and how did you handle it?
Well, Samantha did experience some bullying. I didn't always, she was very quiet. She didn't want to tattletale. I'd have to read her face to know something was wrong. One time a friend came over and told me that she asked Samantha in front of me why she allowed some kid to write on the blackboard that she was a retarded bitch. And I was so horrified I nearly dropped the sandwich plate. You know, why didn't, and I said to her, Samantha, why don't you say anything? And she said, well, I do. I told him that it was rude and it hurt my feelings, but he kept doing it. So that was one instance. In another case, someone was pushing her on the bus and ridiculing her, and she came home looking sad one day, and my daughter's a girl who always has a big smile on her face, and I said, what's wrong, sweetie? You don't look happy. You know, tell me, did something happen? But it's only I had to push to find it out. Now, maybe with boys, it's more physical and it's more obvious. I don't know. But that's what happened with my daughter.
What progress have you observed in the area of autism spectrum disorders?
I think that the fact that there's so much more discussion and research and support groups and the Internet and social media, that there's so much attention focused on the area, that in and of itself has been an improvement. The fact that they're looking at, you know, the diagnosis of girls now and how it may be underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed.
Well, that was a question you anticipated very quickly. I wanted to know how you felt about the diagnosis in girls. Do you think it's they're underdiagnosed or it's understated?
I think that they are underdiagnosed and understated. I think that, I mean, this is just, you know, a layperson.
Right,
you
that's
know,
what
you
we
look
want.
At little girls and boys, little girls tend to sit more quietly and somewhat better behaved. And, you know, boys are much sort of louder and more, you know, more physical. So I think that may be one reason why it's picked up faster in boys, because it expresses itself in a more obvious way. And little girls, I mean, I've heard this before, are somewhat more, even if they are on the spectrum, can sometimes be more social than the boys at an early age. So that's another reason it isn't picked up. They may not be as social as a neurotypical girl, but they're more social than a boy that's been diagnosed with autism.
On your book, My Picture Perfect Family, What Happens When One Twin Has Autism. For those who are listening, where can they get the book? Is it online?
Yes, it's online. It can be ordered on Amazon.com or on BarnesandNoble.com. People who can't remember my name can just go to mypicturepurfectfamily.com and pick it up there, as well as on my author website, which, as I say, no one's going to remember, MargueriteEllisoffen.com. So I recommend just going to mypicturepurfectfamily.com or Amazon.com.
One last question. Did you find that her symptoms changed over time with age? What a role did maturity play?
Oh, maturity played an enormous role. You know, just becoming aware of the fact that she was different, and that it was okay, but that she was going to have to work harder to do things than somebody who didn't have her challenges. So maturity is part of it. Time and practice, and I mean, life situations, doing the best you can to prepare for every situation that could come up that could, you know, be upsetting. You know, life is full of changes and upsets.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I was just going to say to you, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time and your daughter taking the time to share your experiences with ASD.
You're very welcome.
Okay. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.